Hey everyone, Homes.com knows having the right agent can make or break your home search. That's why they provide home shoppers with an agent directory that gives you a detailed look at each agent's experience, like the number of closed sales in a specific neighborhood, average price range, and more. It lets you easily connect with all the agents in the area you're searching so you can find the right agent with the right experience and ultimately the right home for you. Homes.com, we've done your homework.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. Start building your website today at squarespace.com. Enter offer code STUFF at checkout and you'll get 10% off. Squarespace, build it beautiful.
Hey guys, we are going to be live in person, not just disembodied voices, but just standing there.
Yeah.
Hair and all.
Clothes on.
Most likely.
Probably.
Yes.
From the waist down at least.
Right. We're like reverse Donald Ducks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are we going topless?
I guess.
I never forget.
He just wore a shirt and a
hat.
Yeah,
he didn't have on pants.
Right.
Wow.
Anyway, we're doing a live show.
That's right. We're doing several live shows for our Warmer Climes winter tour, and we're sold out in San Francisco.
Boom.
San Diego.
Kapow.
And Austin. So you guys are on our Christmas list for next year.
Yeah, you are.
But there are still tickets available in Dallas and Atlanta.
On a different list.
Boo.
And Birmingham.
And Birmingham and New Orleans. You can still get seats there.
Man, we're all over the map.
That's right. So just go to SYSKLive.com, powered by Squarespace.
Yeah.
As is our tour.
Yes.
And go check it out, man. We'll see you in January, right?
Yes.
You got any other tidbits?
No.
Okay.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant. Jerry's in the house. We're back to basics.
Yeah.
We're doing a social sciences episode.
Oh, man.
I mean, we're all right, man. We get to tear it apart. You believe in body language?
Sure.
Watch this.
You're winking and shouldering and nodding your head and you're loosening up and you're doing some weird biting thing.
What did I say?
You said I'm feeling silly.
That's exactly what I was saying.
How about that?
Yeah, it said I've had a Diet Mountain Dew and I'm pepped up.
Ah, okay.
That's what I was saying.
I missed the...
Now I'm crashing.
And he's down.
You doing good?
Yeah. I'm hanging on by a thread.
Are you?
Sure.
We can make it through this, man. You can do this in your sleep.
Okay.
Don't go to sleep.
Okay.
It'll be so boring.
You could theoretically do this in your sleep.
Yeah.
Okay. I gotcha.
Yeah. So body language. It is a thing. When I was researching, I was like, this is junk science. There's no way this is real. And I could not find anything that just said, like, yes, body language is obviously junk science. Apparently, it's very well established and well reputed. I mean, I understand, like, yes, there is such a thing as body language.
Yeah,
it's
sure.
Rooted in evolution.
Yeah.
It's basically evidence of evolution from an animalian ancestor.
Yeah.
But the idea that, like, you can read somebody, especially, like, that facial coding system, it just struck me as really, like, junky.
Yeah, well, we did, I could have sworn we had done this one when I suggested
it. We did micro-expressions.
Yeah, we did that in, I think, 2009. And I don't remember how I weighed in on it back then. So I'm just going to start anew.
Yes.
It may be a different take. I have no idea.
People grow and change. Their opinions evolve, you know?
Well, here's what I think. Of course, body language is real, and it can tell you a lot. Can tell you a lot.
Uh-huh.
But it can also, you can be misdirected very easily.
Sure.
And, I mean, we'll get to it, but I found some stuff from a former FBI guy even. That doesn't say it's junk science, but he's like, you can fool somebody too. If you're a sociopath, you know this about body language and
right.
Micro expressions.
Yeah, yeah.
Apparently, it's a myth that.
That's how I get by.
Apparently, it's a myth that not having eye contact means deception. While it can,
his whole point is they've done studies over the years, and habitual liars and antisocials and psychopaths have the most eye contact, apparently.
Probably because there's that myth.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like a self-fulfilling myth.
Yeah, Ted Bundy was probably like, I got to make great eye contact with everyone
I'm looking
speak
into
with.
Your soul.
Otherwise, the jig will be up.
Right.
And I won't get to kill people any longer. My favorite thing.
Right. And then, so yeah, there's a lot of myth. There's that one myth also where, like, you look up and to the right or up and to the left if you're lying or recalling.
Yeah.
Remember, I can't remember. We debunked that in something here or there a while back.
Yeah, I think body language is fun to talk about and study, but when you're convicting someone as a jury based on micro-expressions.
Yes, there's where the junk science comes in for me.
It gets a little dangerous.
And not just with body language, too. We need to do a whole episode on forensics in general and just how junky the science that most of it is based on. It's basically the only thing that's left standing is DNA, and even that can be wildly misinterpreted.
Yeah.
And we're using this to, like, execute people.
Yeah.
And there's a big problem with it. So I think we've arrived at my problem with it. It's junk science when you apply it for, like, law enforcement.
Yeah, as fact.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Okay. So,
can we be done?
This is the other thing that got me, too. Albert Mehrabian. I totally nailed that guy's name.
I bet the H is silent.
Mehrabian? Mehrabian?
I bet it's just Mehrabian, not Mehrabian.
Anyway, Dr.
Mehrabian.
He, back in 1981, said that in the first 4 minutes of meeting someone, our facial expressions account for 65% of the impression we make. 7% of that impression comes from our actual words, while the remainder of the information comes from our tone of voice.
Yeah,
I think is what made me think, like, no, this is all BS.
Yeah, because it sounds, who can say that?
You can't.
You
maybe
can't.
In 1981 you could get away with that crap. Not in 2015. No, 16.
Yeah. You lived in the past. Yeah, Mehrabian was, he was probably one of the first researchers to study this in the 1940s out of UCLA. And I agree. You can't just break down percentages. I think what he really means to say, if I may speak for him,
yes,
is facial expressions and tone of voice account for a lot of what you're getting out of a person.
And I don't think anyone would disagree with that.
And the words account maybe for even less than those two things combined.
I think people would agree with that, too. I think it's when you quantify it.
Yeah, sure.
7%. He just said that just because it sounds authoritative.
Yeah, because he fed it into the percentage maker 3000 and it spit it out.
Yeah.
But that is not to miss the point that communicating inadvertently is something that we all do.
Through body language.
Sure.
Yeah. There's a great quote I ran across on a Psychology Today post. The quote comes from a 16th century Scottish mathematician named John Napier. And he said, if language was given to men to conceal their... Oh, you found it too, huh?
Yeah, it's a good one.
It's about as good a quote of body language as you can come up with. You do it, Chuck.
No, you were already halfway through.
You do better 16th century Scottish mathematicians than
no
me.
No way. I'm not doing...
Do Sean Connery reading this.
Oh, man. If language was given to men to conceal their thoughts, then gesture's purpose was to disclose them.
That's perfect.
Not bad.
That was a dead-on John Napier.
It's not as good as my Christoph Waltz.
Yeah. So Napier makes a pretty good point. Like, yeah, you can. Language has all sorts of structure and can be mastered. Body language is, much of it is just inadvertent, and we don't even realize necessarily when you're picking up on it. You just get this weird gut feeling that, no, I don't trust this car salesman, or I want to give this car salesman all of my money, depending on the body language.
Yeah, and it's pretty clear that this started a long time ago. Like, it predates language.
Right.
Because who wrote this, by the way?
This is a Patrick Kiger joint.
Oh, Kiger?
Yeah.
Kiger says, rightfully, that in Tuk Tuk's age, you didn't have a lot of time to suss things out,
right,
like up close and personal. You know, once you got close enough within striking distance...
You can be stricken.
Yeah, you might already have that club upside your head.
Right.
Or that rock in your face.
Yeah.
So you needed to judge someone's body language as they approach you to survive.
Yes.
You know?
So body language makes sense. And you would also presuppose that since we are descended from animals and animals clearly do engage in body language, that body language would be older than language. Although this article says that language didn't exist until about 100,000 years ago. That's under dispute now.
Oh, really?
Possibly as much as a million years ago, people were using some sort of verbal communication.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And Neanderthals apparently also had language, probably.
Interesting.
It is pretty interesting.
I'd like to do one on animal communication.
Have we not?
I think we touched on it here and there, but I know there's a lot of things like cats purring and tails wagging on dogs that are misinterpreted.
Yeah.
Or like a wolf growling. I think that means come pet me.
Right.
You know, it's often misinterpreted as a warning.
Come take this steak out of my mouth, if you dare.
Should we take a break?
Sure.
All right, let's take a quick one, and we're going to get back and explain a little bit more about what one researcher calls thin slices of experience.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
So Josh, I said something about thin slices.
Of experience.
And I'm not talking about the roast beef line at the buffet.
Which is great, thin slices.
Well, those, the carving station.
Yeah, yeah.
You ever worked a carving station?
Have I ever worked one?
Yeah.
I've hung around one long enough that I basically should have been paid, but I was just eating.
What, do you wait for the next roast to come out so you can get the end cut?
I know. I've never been into end cuts, whether it be a loaf of bread or a cut of meat.
Oh, really? Like a prime rib end cut?
Yeah, no.
Oh, daddy, that's good.
Isn't it all salt?
Maybe that's why I love it.
You like the salt, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
the south.
To me, it's like the closer you get to the middle, the juicier it is. I like
that's true
lower
too.
Cooked.
Yeah,
you know?
And a little rarer in the middle,
right.
Obviously.
Yeah, so I think that's my problem with the end of anything.
So
it's undercooked.
You know, I have
or
a theory
overcooked.
About why people don't like to eat the crust.
Why?
It's because it's called crust.
And that might be part of it.
If like 100 years ago they named it like the
butterfly?
Yeah, the butterfly slice.
Yeah.
People would have been like fighting for it.
Yeah.
Like, the butterfly slice is delicious.
Yeah. Have you ever heard George Carlin's little take on that end slice that everybody always goes past? They're like, I'm not going to eat that. That's the poison piece of bread. I'll leave that for my family to eat.
Wait, I guess the end piece isn't called the crust, though, is it? The crust is what's around.
But it's all crust. That's the problem with it.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's nothing but crust.
Yeah.
not butt crust. It's nothing but crust.
I think the other weird, man, this is a...
Jerry, you're so juvenile.
This is a strange tangent. I think the other problem with the bread end pieces is that eating one end piece with a regular slice is a little weird.
Oh, it's, yeah.
But getting that other slice off the tail end is not very feasible or efficient.
No.
To make two crust pieces.
No, but that frequently is the last sandwich that's made out of the loaf because that one end piece has been hanging around.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then it finally works its way to its mate. Yeah. And then you stick some turkey in it and weep quietly while you eat your terrible sandwich.
Man.
Thin slices.
Where were we?
Thin slices? Experience.
Yes, this is a professor of psychology named Nalini Ambati. Ambati.
Huh.
From Tufts University. Shout out to my buddy Robert Shahade from high school.
Okay.
He works at Tufts.
Oh, speaking of, you know, there's a kid with like a really huge hit single out right now from your high school.
Really?
I think your high school is shown in the music video. It's Watch Me Whip, Watch Me Nay Nay.
It's Redan?
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah. Silento.
So I'm no longer the most famous person from my high school?
You were until about 6 months ago.
And I will be again in another 6 months.
Maybe. It's a pretty catchy single. It's a hot, hot, hot track.
Now, we had several professional athletes that are much more popular than me.
Who?
We had a professional punter. Actually, I maybe
you
more
told
popular.
Me that before.
Yeah, we've had a few. There's a baseball player. We had a punter.
Travis Tritt went to my high school.
Shut up. Really?
No.
See, that's big time.
Yeah. Yeah, Travis Tritt is big.
Yeah, I don't have any, like, superstars.
Luke Bryan went to Yumi's high school.
Man, you guys, where'd you go? Beverly Hills 90210?
Yeah, with Shannon Doherty.
Oh, boy, here we go again. Thin slices from Tufts University.
Well, let's talk about the thin slices thing, man. You said earlier that it would be very advantageous, evolutionarily speaking, to be able to read maybe the rough intentions of some other hunter-gatherer 100,000 years ago.
Read the room.
Like from a distance before they could hit you with a rock, right?
Yes.
If that was their intent.
Sure.
Well, just as much, you want to be able to like walk through the world and be threatened by stuff and to make snap judgments about it based on things like body language.
Yeah.
Same thing. And this is what the thin slices has to do with.
Yeah, they're just those first few seconds when you meet somebody. And, I mean, some people may just call it a gut instinct about somebody. But what you're probably doing is reading body language.
Right.
That's what that gut instinct is.
Yes.
And those things are processed and generated in, I think, the limbic system, where emotions and feelings are processed in the brain.
Yeah, limbic system, from what I understand.
That's right, which... she thinks, and I agree with her, that it might explain why we have such a powerful gut instinct about some people when we first meet them, because it's tied to emotion.
Yeah, and the whole point is this guy will cut your throat if you turn your back on him.
Right.
Probably not, but in our modern context, it's, you know, this guy will inflate the price of the car you want to buy if you're not careful.
Yeah.
It's this totally different things, but it's based on the same principle. It's all based on body language, and we're able to make snap judgments that we can't even stop and really analyze what it was that person did or what it was about them.
Right.
We just know that we trust them or don't, or we feel comfortable around them or not, or we fear them or we don't.
Yeah.
Based on this body language, and what this professor is saying is we have a very ancient part of our brain that is responsible for processing this stuff.
Yeah, and I think just for me personally, I think if you try to focus on that too much, then you're not doing yourselves any favors. Like, let it be innate.
Well, yeah, there's some people who coach this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That apparently say, no, do all sorts of crazy, weird stuff, which we'll talk about later.
Yeah, agreed. But what you're looking at there's three different categories, I guess. Innate, learned, and some that are both hybrid. Expressions and postures and things that you do. And like, for instance, you're born with, like, you can blush. That's an innate thing. You blush. You
right.
don't mean to blush.
Especially when somebody's staring at your cheek.
Yeah, I don't think you can make yourself blush.
Watch this.
So, just think about hot things in your mouth.
Just tighten up your core.
So that's the innate side. Learned would be things like hanging someone a bird.
Yeah.
Out the car window.
Right.
Because everyone knows what that means.
Depending on where you are.
And you've learned it.
Yeah, that's not something you're born doing. Like, yeah, I got your diaper right here. Come
although,
change it.
A photo of a baby accidentally shooting a bird is one of the great things.
Sure.
Can we agree?
But it's accidental. There's no meaning attached to it.
That's what you think.
And then there's hybrid gestures that are like shrugging is a really good example. It's something you know, you naturally shrug, right?
Right.
But it's not contextual until you learn what to attach it to. Like, I don't
yeah,
know.
Sure.
You're not born being like, I don't know.
Right, or you cry, but you've also learned that crying can get you something, maybe.
Right,
like I'll cry to get out of a traffic ticket or something.
Sure,
or to gain sympathy.
It can chase your parents off to the bar.
Crying?
Yeah,
yeah.
One of those. and then Chuck, I said something about how flipping somebody a bird. Everybody knows what that means. It does depend on where you are.
Sure,
because there is, especially with learned. So I think innate body language is virtually universal. Stuff that you couldn't possibly control. Like, I can't remember where I read it, but if you take a bite of something putrid and you make that horrible, like, disgusted face, like, oh, my God, I'm about to vomit everywhere.
Right.
Everybody who's watching you doesn't have to go, give me that, and then take a bite and taste it themselves.
Right.
They can look at your face and be like, I'm not going anywhere near that piece of feces that guy just took a bite of.
Yeah, or the
that's how we all learn not to eat feces.
Yeah, but there's also the human thing where you're like, oh God, smell this.
Right, that's the person who wants everyone else to suffer like they just did. But everybody else has just been communicated to by that innate face, that nasty face that you would make when you eat something disgusting. And again, that evolutionarily, that protects us in that respect.
Yeah,
the innate stuff. So that's universal.
Sure.
But it's the learned stuff that's culturally dependent.
Yeah, like, for instance, they have a few examples in the article. Smiling in the U.S. might mean, in the United States, might mean you're happy. Apparently in Asia, it might say, I agree with you. Those are
pretty
close.
It could also cover up embarrassment. If they're embarrassed you or something,
yeah,
they might smile. Yeah.
Is that why everyone's always smiling at me? They're embarrassed for me? What else? Eye contact varies from place to place.
Yeah.
Here in the United States, someone might think you're listening and, like, very keyed into what you're saying.
Or you're Ted Bundy.
Or if you're in Africa, maybe, it might be disrespectful to look someone right in the eye.
Yeah, and I looked around to find out what part of Africa, because I hate to leave it like that, you know?
Yeah, on this massive continent.
Right. Do not look people in the eyes.
Yeah,
I couldn't find any. And everyone said some parts of Africa, everywhere I looked. No one specifically said in the Congo it's considered impolite or aggressive or something like that to maintain eye contact. It's definitely in Japan.
Yeah.
If you make eye contact with somebody, you are saying I'm your superior. So if you are socially or, say, business-wise an inferior to somebody, you're averting your gaze and it's respectful. In the U.S., you shake hands and you make eye contact and you just, climbed a rung right there.
Unless you're Prince, and then he's like, nobody can have eye contact with me.
Is that for real? Because he likes to do things that just mess with people for fun.
I think 90% of the stories you've heard about Prince are not true.
What about him playing basketball? He's like a really good basketball player, though, says Charlie Murphy.
Well, I believe in everything Charlie Murphy says.
There you go. I found some more culturally bound stuff.
What else?
Thumbs up in New Zealand does not mean, like, right on.
Does that mean, a thumb up your butt?
Pretty much.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
You don't want to do that. Similarly, when you make, like, the peace sign, as long as you're not showing the people the back of your hand.
Sure, in England, that's
yeah, and in Australia, and I believe New Zealand, too. Like that movie Bad Taste, the cover of it. I think Peter Jackson's first or second movie.
Oh, right.
The cover of it's like an alien going like that, and I'm like, what's two?
Yeah, why is he showing me the number two?
Then as I grew up, I learned to understand what that was.
What else you got?
In some cultures, nodding means no. Like nodding yes actually means no, like in Greece and Bulgaria.
Oh, wow. That could get you in trouble.
Yeah, and in Mexico, this is what I found. Mexico, Haiti, and Spain. It is perfectly normal to go psst to a waiter which I do. I don't do it to waiters, but I'm a kind of person.
Oh, really?
That's how you call someone over and get their attention. You may also make kissing noises at them.
To a waiter?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So I go to Mexico, I need my check, and I go...
I guess, according to this thing that I read, which seemed pretty legitimate.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What was the website?
I don't remember. I'll definitely send it to you to post, but it was researched material to be used by business people around the world.
Oh, okay.
If it was a hoax, then they did a pretty good job fooling me.
Gotcha. All right. Well, let's take another break and we'll come back and we'll talk about, deciphering some of these nonverbal cues right after this.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at PurdueGlobal.edu.
All right, so language is a very precise thing, or it should be, or can be. Body language, you would think, is just all over the map, but there are actually some categories that some brilliant social scientists have come up with.
Yeah.
And I think they make sense.
Yeah, basically they've broken it down into five categories or five types of nonverbal communication, body language.
Yeah.
There's emblems.
It's like hanging a bird.
Yeah, or shaking your fist or something like that. Something that is very symbolic of something else that you can also put into words, right?
Who shakes a fist at someone?
Some people do.
Okay.
It's a good.
Yeah?
Yeah. Because it's saying like
that middle finger, and then you're
that's
really with
gas. That's very aggressive.
Okay,
that's very aggressive.
I'm just kidding. I never flick someone a bird.
Oh really?
Oh yeah. Like in a car or something? No way.
Yeah. Apparently, it's really dangerous.
Yeah, and that's why I do it. I think it's just. I mean, I'll get mad and say things, but I would never. I don't know who that person is.
Yeah, could be a psycho.
Yeah, then you're getting chased or you're getting shot at by someone because you.
Road
like
rage.
You just had to shoot a bird?
Yeah. We talked about this in the road rage episode.
Yeah, I wouldn't hang people the bird. That's not smart.
By the way, I want to update on that. I've been improving more and more behaviorally.
Oh, yeah?
Even since the road rage episode. And I was already on the right path then.
So you're doing good behind the wheel?
I'm doing
saying?
So good.
I feel like I'm about the same.
Well, you've always been that way.
No, but I get mad.
One time you rode with me, I think it was the first time you ever rode with me, and I started yelling at somebody. You're like, really?
Well,
you seem genuinely surprised. And I remember thinking, like, this
is wrong?
Abnormal?
Well, that was probably because you were like sending an email with your left hand and driving with your knee and had a coffee in the other.
I've gotten so much better.
That's good. It's because you value your life.
I do.
It's great. emblems. After emblems, illustrators, which like shaking your head to as far as emphasis, if to emphasize something you're saying.
Right.
Like
no.
Sure.
You can just say no, but the person's like, he doesn't really mean that until you shake your head while you say no.
Then
and especially
no
if you
twice.
Do it slowly.
Yeah.
That you're really saying like, do not ask me again.
Yeah. Boy, I never thought about that. The slow one really does mean something different.
It does. It adds, it bulks it up,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Regulators, I think this is in a conversation to let someone else know that maybe, all right, it's time for you to talk now, or it's time for me to talk.
Right, or it's time for us to stop talking, like looking at your watch.
Or just getting up and walking away.
That's, yeah.
That's body language.
Yeah, I guess it is. It definitely speaks volumes. There's adapters, which I guess have to do with the person listening, or I guess anybody, either one, making themselves more comfortable. Like, you know, when you're in a conversation with somebody and they just kind of shift in their seat.
Like settle in?
Yeah. Now, they could be doing it differently where they're fidgeting, they're shifting in their seat uncomfortably, like they can't get comfortable. That says something totally different than somebody who's just like settling in, just making themselves more comfortable.
Right. I guess if you like, if you're having a conversation and someone just sits up on the edge of their seat, that kind of says, we're done here.
Sure.
Like, I'm about to get up.
Yeah.
So please say something in closure.
Yeah, especially if you sigh while you do that too, you know?
Yeah.
And then there's affect displays. And these are the ones that most people think of when they think of body language. These are the ones that, you know, like where you make that face when you eat something putrid, or your shoulders go up around your ears when you're scared all of a sudden.
Yeah, if you're mad, it's emotional based.
Yeah.
Emotion based?
Yeah, like your eyebrows furrow.
Right.
There's just so much body language. I came across this one guy from 1978, an M. Argyle. No idea what the M stands for. But in 1978, Professor M. Argyle, a researcher of body language, said that there's probably something like 700,000 words in the body language,
wow.
human body language. I have no idea how he or she came up with that.
That seems high.
But it's fun to throw out there.
Junk science.
1978.
Yeah, you could say anything back then, as far as like social psychology.
Yeah.
Misinterpreting body language is, we talked a little bit about that. That is very easy to do. They have one little anecdotal story about a woman who was a consultant that I think she was pitching in the CEO of a big company.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy just sat there basically with his arms crossed and didn't emote. And at the end was just like, thank you. And she thought, well, I've blown this one. And turns out that is just the way that guy is.
He loved a jerk.
I know. He loved the presentation. And if he hadn't liked it, he just would have left, is what the partner said, I think.
Yeah.
So you can easily misinterpret body language. I don't know if it's... I guess it could be dangerous.
And that, well, I mean, that's part of the problem. It can be dangerous, especially when you apply it to law enforcement. Like Paul Ekman, we talked about him heavily in the micro-expressions episode because he basically... studied micro expressions through facial muscle movement,
yeah.
and figured out what each one meant. And he came up with the facial action coding system, the FACS, which apparently the FBI and other law enforcement agencies use to tell whether you're lying or you're hiding something in an interrogation. Misreading that's dangerous. That's when it becomes dangerous for sure.
Yeah, this dude I was talking about, Joe Navarro, who was a 25-year vet of the FBI.
Yeah.
He's written a lot about body language.
Right.
And he's one of the ones that warns about the myths and misreading things. But he wrote a whole article on shoulders. And he said everyone's always talking about the face and facial expressions. He thinks you can read a lot into the shoulders of a person.
Yeah.
Whether it's slumping or bowing up or... and then he actually talked to criminals over his entire career and said, what do you look for in a victim? So if you're looking to not be victimized, you might want to avoid these things.
Okay.
Looking frail or weak or not athletic.
Yeah. Work out.
Yeah, or just, you know, try and carry yourself like you're not frail or weak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's a lot to do with the shoulders. Situational awareness, which is a big one.
Yeah.
If you just look like you're have your head in the clouds.
That's one for
you
me.
Be a target.
Yeah.
What you're in your head about something.
Sure.
Yeah. And then the way someone swings their arms, like vigorously or real subdued.
Or not at all, like on that one episode
yeah,
of Seinfeld.
Yeah, that was, who was that, Raquel Welch?
No, it was, well, yeah, it ended up as Raquel Welch, but right. It was Molly Shannon.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
She remembers she like swept.
Yeah.
Elaine's desk just cleaned.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I love really Molly Shannon. She's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
She's fantastic. So what was, the arm swing, and basically what these criminals would say to him over and over is, you know, the silverbacks don't go after other silverbacks. They go after the weak ones. And they said it's the same with criminals. So, like, keep those shoulders straight. And I was like, what's a silverback? I forgot.
This sounds like a criminal corporate buzz speak.
Yeah.
You know? Silverbacks, that's the local soccer team. How do you not know what that is?
Is it?
Sure.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
All right. What else we got? Oh, these people that try and coach you, we were going to mention them.
Yeah, nut jobs.
I don't think they're nut jobs.
Dude, okay, the one person who emerges as a hero from this article says, be very careful in trying to pay attention to your body language and speak consciously through it, because you're going to have massive problems.
Yeah.
That's not what body language is intended for. So the people who say, no, master your body language and use it to communicate, you're going to come off as a creep.
Right.
An aggressive, weirdo, corporate creep if you do that.
Well, yeah. And I mean, if you're making a presentation, it's hard enough to get the words right.
Yeah.
So if you start thinking like about every single movement you make and what that conveys, I agree. I don't think you're doing yourself any favors.
Or like if you go to, again, a car sales a car lot, right?
Yeah.
And you're like, I'm going to make sure I look very defensive and aggressive. So I'm going to go rigid and my shoulders are going to go up.
Right.
The car salesman's going to be like, that guy's walking like a robot. I'm going to take him for a ride.
True.
You know? You could conceivably speak through your body language more. I don't dispute that.
Right.
You can become more aware of your natural body language, too. I don't dispute that either. But when you focus on it and use it as a technique to manipulate other people, I have issues with that.
Well, here was one idea I didn't think was terrible. Like, if you do a lot of public speaking, then maybe watching yourself with the sound off.
Sure. I didn't disagree with that one either.
That's not a terrible idea, I think.
As a matter of fact, I was like, maybe I should try that.
No, don't do that. The other technique that was brought up was called mirroring. That means, and this just sounds crazy to me, this is when you actually try and mimic the person you're talking to, mimic their body language and expressions to, I guess, to
make them feel more comfortable to you. People are attracted to themselves is the basis of it.
Oh, okay.
So when you mimic them, they feel more relaxed around you. They're like, I really like that person. I like the cut of their jib. I can't put my finger on it. But they're actually mimicking your own body language. If you're leaning against the wall,
right?
They're going to lean against the wall too.
That's disconcerting.
It is. That's nuts. You shouldn't do that to people. That's manipulative and weird. And it just be yourself. How about that?
Yeah, I think this quote sums it up. Trying to use body language by reading a body language dictionary is like trying to speak French by reading a French dictionary. See, you can list off all the nonverbal cues in the world, but if you try and learn the body language, quote unquote, because of that, then you're just going to end up confused or you're going to miss something they actually said.
Yeah. And plus also context is huge too. Like if you're just watching somebody's body language, like a hawk in a conversation, you don't necessarily know that person's baseline. So what is by definition is body language dictionary, a red flag.
Right.
Doesn't necessarily mean it's a red flag with that person. You know, like if they're yawning, are they bored?
Right.
Or are they nervous?
Right.
You got to have context, and you can't just read people like that. It's stupid. Go with your gut.
Sure.
But I don't think you should actively try to read it. If you want to, go ahead. I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm not going to.
I did read an article with one woman who was an expert, supposedly, and she did talk a lot about the baseline. She's like, that's the most important thing.
Because
you don't know. You got to know how someone normally is. Are they twitchy?
Yeah.
Then if they're twitchy in a conversation, that's normal for them.
Right.
So
it doesn't mean that you can't trust what they're saying right then.
Yeah.
It just means that they're a little awkward.
Yeah.
Like me.
You're not awkward.
You got anything else?
Nope.
Friends, that is body language, and if you want to know more about it, you can type these words, body language, into the search bar at howstuffworks.com, and since I said friends, it's time for listener mail.
This is a question, actually, I said we'd answer on the air. Hey guys, been listening for quite a few years, and you've seen me through a lot of years of growth out of high school and into my own as an adult. I have a question that's been a challenge for me recently. I'm studying permaculture quite intensively, and parts of the study are pretty depressing, like climate change, species lost, and unfair trade. I try to reflect positives only to my clients who are trying to grow their own food, because I'd rather encourage them to sustain themselves physically and emotionally than feel guilted or trapped into changing a lifestyle. I realize that having the opportunity and time to focus on ethical choices is a luxury, and want to avoid shaming people. I think this approach is good for my own well-being, because tackling issues bigger than myself seems more harmful than productive. But like you, part of my job is education. So the question is, how do you guys deal with darker topics that you cover? I really appreciate the way you do it, and I would like some insight and advice how you prevent these topics from weighing too heavily on you and still live a life of enjoyment, yet conveying topics honestly. And that is from Annalise in Australia.
Nice.
Ew. I think my answer is, like, when we cover something like dementia or HIV, like we recently did, we're always going to have humor in there, respectfully and in the right ways.
Sure.
Because that's what we do.
Plus also,
that helps.
When we're getting this stuff across, it's not like we're causing dementia. We're just saying, like, here's all the information that
right.
we found on this. Here's everything you need to know about dementia. And I think the thing that allows us to go from, you know, a lighthearted topic to a very dark topic to whatever is that we're putting it out there as objectively as possible, or as unbiased as possible.
Trying to.
We're not passing much judgment on it, depending on the topic. But for the most part, we don't really pass too much judgment on it. And
yeah.
I think that allows us to talk about anything.
Yeah, and as far as taking it home, if we do something that's a big bummer that it really impacts me, it'll bum me out for sure.
Yeah.
But just like anything else, I think knowledge is key to the more you know about something, the less scared you might be of it.
Yeah.
How's that?
You just go work it out, you know?
Good answer?
Yeah, that's a great answer, Chuck.
Me too.
If you want to get in touch with Chuck or me or Jerry or anybody who we could conceivably pass a message along to, right?
Yeah.
You can tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. You can join us on Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. You can send us an email to StuffPodcast@HowStuffWorks.com. And as always, join us at our home on the web, StuffYouShouldKnow.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.